So our first talk this afternoon is Mallory Rayor. She's a PhD candidate in history and philosophy of science at Cambridge University.
Thank you. Okay, thank you all for being here. I want to give a little bit of background on myself and my work just to kind of situate what I'm about to tell you guys about. So my background's in religious studies. So what I do as a philosopher of science and historian of science is I look at case studies of different religious communities, their beliefs about the nature of science, their interactions with the scientific community, and use that as a springboard to talk about conversations happening usually in philosophy of science around the nature of scientific knowledge. And so I'm going to present a case study today and talk about consistency. And I'm really interested to hear thoughts, questions, and I know there's only 5 minutes, so like I have my email. Please feel free to reach out to me or grab me while I'm around for the conference, because I really am interested to hear your thoughts and feedback on this case that I've started working on recently. So first, I want to talk about consistency. So what is consistency? This is like the law of non-contradiction. When we think about consistency in scientific theories, generally there's a view of internal consistency and external consistency. So, you know, internal consistency would mean that like two things can't be contradictory within a theory, and that external means across theories, that we could have two theories that contradict each other. That means that only one of them could be true. And this is generally accepted as one of the ways that we establish what a good scientific theory is and is seen as how we understand the nature of truth. So part of this is because of a history of really embedded notions of rationality, that these sorts of logical laws, like the law of non-contradiction, map onto human rationality. But I want to question that. I want to question whether or not consistency is actually helpful when evaluating scientific theories by using this case study. So first, to kind of give a little brief overview of where this is in philosophy of science. So in philosophy of science, we have the demarcation problem, which is how do we decide what is science and what is not science, or how do we demarcate good theories from bad theories? And there's a long history of trying to do this through methodology or other ways that it doesn't work. Long story short, it doesn't work. So the way the literature's gone, first it was to say, well, maybe what makes a good theory is something that just is about the facts, right? It's about the empirical facts that we discover and any kind of value or non-factual element in the theory. If we leave out as much of that as possible, then we can say that this theory is good or better than another theory. But there's lots of problems with that. Turns out values play an intrinsic role in scientific process, even down to how we choose our hypotheses, how we decide to interpret data. And so the field has generally decided that, like, okay, there's going to be values in science. So now there's this new problem of demarcation to say, well, what kinds of values do we want in scientific theory? And overall in the field, values that are seen as epistemic values, so values that contribute to the knowledge and are seen as different from things like ethical values or biases, those are seen as beneficial. So maybe if we have good values in our theory, and these are some lists of values that are seen as good values. So accuracy, consistency, scope, simplicity, fruitfulness. If our theories have that, then maybe that's how we can decide if it's a good theory or not. And this has been very much contested. There's a lot of literature that talks about non-epistemic values playing an essential role in science, which like I do agree with overall. But overall, in the literature and values in science, there is this idea that like theories should be consistent or empirically adequate, and that's a minimal criteria for a theory to be acceptable in science. And this is the general view, and so this is what I kind of am contesting in my work. So I want to look at a case study of a group that's a subgroup of Christian Reconstructionists and look at how they think about consistency and scientific theories. And then I want to see how this might potentially factor into their rejection of climate science or other areas of the scientific consensus more generally. And I then am going to invite questions on if this should change how we view consistency overall. So one thing that I like to preface with is like, why look at a group like this? This group often gets classified as like science denialist, which I really don't like that term. I keep asking people at conferences, if you have any idea of like what I can say, like what's a better way to talk about this, like please give me ideas, because I don't like science denialist or even science skepticism, but I don't know what else to call it. But these groups often get characterized as irrational or misinformed and just not worth engaging with. But I think groups like this one, they're highly intelligent, highly educated. And if we're going to have effective science communication and education, it's really important to understand how they view science so that we're not talking past each other. So this group, which some of you guys might be familiar with, is based in Moscow, Idaho. It's led by a pastor named Douglas Wilson, pictured here. They are Christian Reconstructionists and Theonomists. Christ Church is the main church. It was founded in the 70s and has really flourished since then. They've started their own denomination called the CREC, or Communion of Reformed Evangelical Churches. And this group is very well educated. Doug has his undergrad and master's in philosophy from the University of Idaho. And another person who I'll talk about is his brother, Gordon Wilson, who has a PhD in environmental science and public policy from George Mason. And also this group has a huge output of materials, which some of you may be familiar with. So they have their own publishing house called Canon Press. They now have their own streaming platform called Canon Plus. Doug is also a prolific blogger. I spent like 3 months going through his blogs last year. And they also have some very thorough and intense social media campaigns. They also have started an education movement, which you might be aware of. So the ACCS, or Association of Classical Christian Schools, now has over 530 schools throughout the U.S. and other countries. Doug started Logos School in Moscow as the first school, and this has spread on since there. There's also a college, New St. Andrew's College in Moscow, and they're opening up a new college called New Aberdeen in North Carolina this fall. So I'm going to put this up here. Those of you who are familiar with this group will know that every November they have this really intense media campaign called No Quarter November, which I love because it gives me great pictures for slideshows. So if you see stuff that's like fire and like that's from No Quarter November, this last November they had a flamethrower on the Canon Press website. I don't know if it's real or not, but that was great. But I do want to draw attention to that in this logo for No Quarter November, they have the pencils under the skull and crossbones. This group uses a lot of imagery from like battle, fighting, very intense imagery. But the underlying theme is that it's an ideological battle and one that we fight academically in a sense. So there's pencils, a lot of the images, and one that I'll use at the end of the slideshow shows Doug reading in a field of fire. And so this group really cares about fighting an intellectual battle, not just in one in sort of the ideological front, not just necessarily a theological front. Why do they get classified as like a science denialist group? They reject large portions of the scientific consensus. They reject evolution, climate science. They believe the Earth is less than 6,000 years old, and they were also at the forefront of the anti-vax and anti-mask movement during the pandemic. This group has a really strong view of truth. So they're presuppositionalists, which means that they believe that you have to have a presupposition of a rational God in order for any kind of human discourse to even get off the ground. So they would say that believing in evolution means that you have no rational reason to even believe in rationality or trust human reasoning to begin with. So consistency is really important in their theological framework. Doug has written that consistency is an attribute of God himself, such that he could not have created a world in which the laws of non-contradiction don't apply. And so if there are two things that are contradictory, one of them just can't be true. And he also talks about that denying the law of non-contradiction, allowing inconsistencies, is this sort of gateway into utter chaos, not just in terms of your personal epistemology, but in the sort of broader society. So one thing I think is interesting is he talks about the reason why we want to follow these laws is also that it has societal impacts, that when we reason poorly, it impacts the people around us. So we also have a societal mandate to reason well. This group also, I think, connected to this view of truth that they have, they emphasize logic very strongly, and they see it as mapping onto human rationality. So you can see this is a textbook that Doug has written. The really grainy, because I couldn't find a better picture of it, line underneath is the fundamentals of thinking well. So they think that the laws of first order symbolic logic map onto higher laws about human rationality and truth. And the ACCS schools are some of the only ones in the U.S. that have mandatory logic classes, both formal and informal. Canon Press also sells these adorable fallacy flashcards that I just think are really cute to help students memorize logical fallacies. And I usually bring this up when I'm talking to groups where I need to convince them that like these groups don't just use logical fallacies all the time. I think they know them way better than me, way better than most people. But these are cute, and they use this for their elementary school curriculum. Okay, so I want to preface a like little philosophical, theological sidebar. So these claims about the nature of laws and logic and like the law of non-contradiction, this is a very intense, very strong view of truth. And I have concerns about these sorts of commitments, especially when it's about the necessity of these features. So when we're talking about if the law of non-contradiction is an attribute of God, I can see that that's intuitive, but is this really an attribute of God that we want to make some sort of like epistemological or metaphysical commitment to? Or could we just be limited by our own human imagination and not leave space for the fact that like maybe God could have created another world possibly where it's completely unlike anything that we think is potentially rational? So also, Doug, he really doesn't like anything that has to do with pluralism, relativism, and postmodernism. He writes extensively about it. I love this quote. It's very like classic Doug. And basically, part of this is because of contradiction and consistency. So he would say, if you have different systems and they're contradictory, only one can be true. And so anything where there's multiple kinds of systems, he doesn't like. So one of the questions I had was like, okay, well, what would this group do with like systems of geometry, right? When we think about geometry, we have Euclidean geometry and non-Euclidean geometries, which are their own distinct systems that directly contradict each other, but we use them in different ways. And most philosophers would say, we don't talk about systems of geometry in terms of their truth. We talk about them in like what we can use them for, and we use them for different things. Euclidean geometry is very helpful to map out the space in which we live, whereas non-Euclidean geometry is really helpful for quantum mechanics. And I didn't find anything that Doug had written on this, but one of the faculty at New St. Andrews, who has a PhD in philosophy from Notre Dame, has written an essay on geometry for one of the curriculum textbooks. And basically, he says that Euclidean geometry is false because you have these contradictory systems, and it appears that non-Euclidean geometry is used by Einstein to make quantum mechanics that seems to map onto the world better than Euclidean geometry, so therefore Euclidean geometry has to be false, which is a very strong view. So a quick side note about science. This group has a lot of promotional materials that they trust science, so that the alumni of their schools trust science more than your average like evangelical, Christian-educated students. There we go. That's the word I was looking for. So they really care about science, and they talk very highly about science in general. So why reject climate science in particular? And this is one of the ones I've been trying to dig into over the past 6 months. And some of the reasons I found are that, A, they think that climate change has just become a popular topic, so it's more likely to get funding, and that leads to a lot of bias. But they also think there's not enough space for dissent in climate science. They also would say that the scientific consensus can be wrong. So anytime there's any media that talks about the scientific consensus as X, they tend to say, well, show me the data, because the scientific consensus could be right or wrong. It doesn't matter that everyone agrees. What matters is what the data says. But also, they don't like or are very skeptical when there's different contradictory theories or models and or messaging, because again, they can't all be true. This also comes through in other areas, like the hesitancy during the COVID pandemic around vaccines and masks. They seemed, from a blog post that Doug has written, very concerned about the sort of contradictory messaging that was coming out during this time. But what I want to point out is that this notion of consistency is very aligned with science communication and science education, and also with how truth is understood in much of the religion and science discourse more broadly. And so when you're trying to look at, like, oh, is this group doing anything wrong? They seem to actually be playing by the rules that have been set out. So I also want to flag that there's definitely other factors at play in something like this group being skeptical of climate science. So I've been categorizing them into these kind of four issues. So their notion of truth and consistency, I would say, has to do with their overall metaphysical commitments. But there's also, of course, their relationship with scripture and authority of scripture. So something like rejecting evolution, I think, can be very closely tied to having a literal view of Genesis. Also, political commitments, I think, do play a role. There's research about, which I put up here, that political commitments tend to indicate your trust in different realms of science, like climate science. But then there's also these everyday epistemology concerns, like worrying about bias in climate science research, that seem to be stuff that, like, everyone can kind of agree on. But what does this mean? I think this might point to some problems when we're using these sorts of values to demarcate scientific theories, and that this case might call into question whether or not using consistency as an indicator of a good theory is actually universally beneficial. I think it's worth noting that this is an attempt, or the reason behind this is to try and give more authority to science, or try to help increase trust in science. But it actually doesn't map onto how science is. When we look at something like climate science, it tends to be much, much messier. Or even when we look at not science, but like geometries, that is messier and potentially needs a more nuanced view of truth than we are providing in what is the sort of common science education and science communication. So there's this really interesting paper by Karen Kabacha that I have been thinking about for a while, where she basically talks about how there's this group that she would classify as like pro-science, science denialist, that questions climate science, but because they have such a strong view of science and scientific truth, that it means they look at climate science and they're like, this doesn't meet the standard that they think it should. And so a lot of this is around misconceptions about objectivity, the scientific method, and tentativeness of knowledge. And I think that this maps on to what I see going on in this group. And so all that to say, I'm really starting with this research to question about appealing to epistemic values like consistency. And I think it might create an expectation for science by setting the bar too high that could backfire potentially and create more distrust. And often in the discourse around this, the response is just to like double down on the science, which I think then exacerbates the problems even more. I also question whether or not this is a good way to demarcate theories in general, which I still need to do more work on that. But it's this sort of like suspicion I have moving forward. And also it has me questioning if consistency is actually a necessary part of human rationality, or if it's just very, very ingrained and entrenched at this point. So I also see some of these questions as opening up a new space for science and theology. I think a lot of the science and theology discourse has really relied on some of these oversimplified caricatures of science, which have frankly been dead in the philosophy of science and history of science for about 100 years now. And so I think there's lessons there that when a religion allies itself with science, and I see this with work I do with other religious communities as well, it makes itself fully compatible with science because it sees science as this like sort of authority when it comes to knowledge. But it also takes on science's epistemic problems. And there's a whole host of literature that talks about that. And so I keep thinking to myself, like, what might the discourse, especially between Christian theology and science, look like if it used a more accurate conception of scientific knowledge. And in my research moving forward that I'm hoping to do after my PhD and into my postdoctoral work is look at what would a pluralist conception of science do to potentially reinvigorate the religion and science debate. And I'm really interested to see that play out in Christian theology and science as well. So yes, I'm really interested to hear your thoughts, but thank you for your time.
Thank you. All right, we have about 5 minutes for questions. Just as a reminder, questions generally start with a word like who, what, when, where, why, and at the end with your voice going up at the end.
Thank you. Fascinating talk. I love things like this. So my question is on your notion of consistency and your doubting of it. So it seems to me that science is about probabilities and models for the world, and that scientists don't ever really claim that their model is actually the true. It's just what fits best. So do you think that if you say consistency is not a good epistemic value, that you're throwing the baby out of the bathwater instead of saying a good theory is the most consistent? Like, it doesn't have to be 100% consistent to be true or false, necessarily, but like the theory that is the most consistent seems to be the best model that we have at the time.
Yeah, this is a really good question, and it's one that I get a lot, and I'm still thinking through. Part of it is, I would say, I am not against consistency. I just think that maybe we should start questioning whether that would be the determining factor of if we have two theories and one's more consistent than the other. I'm not necessarily sure that that would be the deciding factor, especially I like to think of using models in terms of utility a lot more. Like, what can we do with it? Is it useful for what we're trying to do? And potentially one that's more inconsistent might, like, consistency is not coextensive with utility necessarily, if that makes sense.
A couple questions, if I could. How does this community define the word truth?
That is a big question.
Foundational.
I mean, I think they would say that truth is part of the nature of God, and that it is absolute, and that these sorts of laws like non-contradiction apply because they are also attributes of God, which is a very quick answer to a very complex question. But I think that's probably all I can do right now.
Yeah, I don't put this on you, but they don't have a clear definition of truth. Given their commitment to science and consistency, how do they address the contradictions between quantum theory and general theory?
So they would say quantum. I haven't seen them explicitly say this, but based on what I see with the geometry example, I would say they would say quantum mechanics is true, and it proved relativity false, which I think also aligns with some scientists as well. I was in a talk a couple of weeks ago where a quantum physicist was saying that Newtonian mechanics can be reduced to quantum mechanics, which I disagree with, but it means that this group's not like very far out there with holding a view like that.
What are the approaches to this concept of domain of validity? Because I think in physics, it's more like they would phrase it as Newtonian mechanics is valid or has utility at these macroscopic scales where things are not relativistic. And in that case, like, it would be a lot less a conversation about true, not true. It's like its applicability is powerful enough that you could predict that there's a Neptune, that there's a Uranus and stuff. And then when you go to super fast speeds and super small scales, then you find new things that are new theories that are more valid at those scales. So what would it look like to shift the conversation from just saying like true, not true, consistent, not consistent, just like valid at this scale, valid at that scale, especially when it comes to science?
Yes, I agree completely. And I think that kind of aligns with what I envision for a more like pluralist conception of scientific truth or knowledge. I will say with this group, their view of validity. That's one that I'm hoping to dig into. I need to like get my hands on like all of their logic curriculum and go through. But from what I've seen so far, validity is still tied with truth. And so it's not emphasized in the same way that like you've described, but I also need to keep going through all of these materials.
I'm afraid that it's time for us to shift.